I used to work for Hewlett-Packard. I did that before I came. I went to theological college. And on my second day in the company, I was sent on a behavioral skills course. I don't know if you've done that. You may look at me and think, well, it didn't do much good, Rico. But I got sent on this course. And the basic theme of the course was assertiveness. And it taught us how to insist on our rights and how to get our way. And there was lots of role play on this course. And what they would do is they would put you through confrontational situations in the office or in the restaurant or at the ticket barrier when you were rehearsed in terms of going through the feeling of confrontation so you got used to that confrontation and yet were able to insist on your rights. So that's what we did for a couple of days. It was actually very grueling doing it. They then gave us various techniques to ensure that the outcome of any situation was the one we wanted. And interestingly, the one that they majored on most in terms of getting what you wanted was listening. It is having good listening skills. If you listen to what someone is saying, feed that back, you then become very influential. Nevertheless, the tool listening was a part of your armory for self-assertion, for your rights, for self-promotion. I didn't listen in order to serve. I listened in order to get my way, because that's how I could serve the company or myself better. So that assertiveness training course had as its aim the ability to get my way. It's in absolute contrast to the passage we've got in front of us today, because the keynote of this passage is not getting my way, it is submission. Verse 13, can we see as we look down? Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men. Submit. That's what it is. And the theme goes on, can we see it in 2:18? We'll see this next week. Slaves, submit yourselves to your masters. 3 verse 1, wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands. Now, frankly, I can't think of a theme that is less popular today. The course at Hewlett-Packard was about self-assertion, but Scripture says, no, Rico, the rest of us, go the way of submission. Our great cry of today is this, isn't it? Nobody can tell me what to do. How dare anybody tell me what to do? I am my own man, I'm my own woman, and no one is going to tell me what to do. I have my rights. Now, this passage goes in exactly the opposite direction. I once did a funeral, and the gravestone next door to the place where we were doing the burial had on it, to Alfie, as he always used to say, I am the boss. That was the gravestone. And I think we knew where he stood. He obviously hadn't been pondering 2 Peter in his time. But the Bible says, no, actually, if you throw off authority and you insist on being the boss, then you end up in exile, naked, east of Eden, cursed, and away from God's presence. That was Adam and Eve as they took fruit from the tree of good and evil. And they said, we will decide what is right. We will make our own choices. We will not have any other authority. They ended up in turmoil, in exile, and cursed. Likewise, the prodigal son, he leaves home because he wants to be independent, and he ends up in the pigsty. And the Bible says, if you want to make up your own rules, then you end up east of Eden, in exile, in the pigsty. Maybe not in this life, but definitely in the next. Well, why submit? Why submit? Verses 11 and 12. We had last week these verses. We were told here to submit to God's law, if you look down, and abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. And Peter's point is, if you yield to your sinful desires, then you will be like those around you, and your Christian witness will be ineffective. And sadly, the implication from what Peter is saying is this. He says, look, unfortunately, very sadly, the people around you are looking for excuses to reject the gospel. The aroma of Christ for many is not what they want. They're longing for a good excuse to push it away, and there is not a better excuse than an inconsistent Christian life. So if you are not living out the gospel, living a consistent life, that gives them a great excuse to push it away. I have a friend called Lance. He's actually just got married. And for Lance, the turning point in his life was when he was drunk. He was from a Christian home, but he wasn't living the Christian life. He was drunk, and the only time he ever spoke of Christ was when he was actually drunk. And he was speaking to a friend in the rugby club as he was drunk. The friend was drunk. And the friend turned on him and exploded and said, "You, Lance, never, never speak to me of the Christian faith again. You're as bad as I am. You're drunk at the moment. How dare you think you can speak to me?" And for Lance, that was a turning point in his life, because he saw for the first time that his inconsistency actually stopped him being able to say anything with credibility. And Peter says, submit, verse 11, to God's law, abstain from sinful desires. Don't give them any ammunition for easily rejecting the gospel. I've got another friend who lives elsewhere in the country. In the department in which he worked, there was another Christian who wore a fish on his lapel. This Christian got into an affair in the department with a woman half his age, and halfway through the affair, took off the fish on his lapel that he'd worn for many years. He said that it just became a standing joke in the department whether he would be wearing his fish that day or not. And the whole witness of my friend was utterly blunted by that other professing Christian's behaviour. Verse 12, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God. Well, they didn't see good deeds in that department. And the word good there carries with it the sense of beauty, that which is honourable and admirable. So the question for each of us today is, what must we abstain from in order to maintain an authentic Christian witness? Is there something in our Christian living which actually is glaringly inconsistent? D.L. Moody said, I have more trouble with D.L. Moody than any other man I know. It's true of us as well. We have trouble with ourselves. And that's why it's very interesting if we look down again, verse 11, which war against your soul. It is a military campaign, a daily campaign. I don't know what the thing is, but what is the thing that stops you being consistent? And it's a constant battle against that. So that is really the internal war, verses 11 and 12. We now, as we come to our passage, switch externally in verse 13, if we can look down. We come to another front, the external world, if you like, and look down at verse 13 and see what the command is here. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men. And there are 3 points here. Why submit? One, because of the origin of authority. Secondly, for the reputation of the church. And thirdly, because of the characteristic marks of a Christian. So why submit to the authorities of the land? One, because of the origin of authority. And as we look down, the key word is instituted. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority or to the governor, who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. Now that word instituted has the sense of God-given. So the authorities, the government, are put there by God for our benefit. And as Christian citizens, we should submit to the authority vested in a human government. Now what is striking here, this is very striking, is that the Christians Peter is writing to are having a dreadful time. Nero is the emperor. So 1 Peter 1, they are strangers in the world and scattered. Many of them have left Jerusalem and Rome because of persecution and state persecution. 1 verse 6, they are suffering grief in all kinds of trials. They're often persecuted. Peter himself would be martyred. And yet, it's extraordinary, despite that persecution, Peter says, submit to the authorities. Don't cause a revolution. As he stands up in Acts chapter 4, verse 19, he says to the Sanhedrin, with all respect, he says, judge for yourselves whether it's right in God's sight to obey you rather than God. So he says, we will continue to preach the gospel, but that does not mean that we will not submit to the authorities of the land. If you stop us preaching, I'm afraid you'll have to kill us, because we'll continue to proclaim the message. But it does not mean we're not going to try and be good citizens. So even if the government is opposed to you, says Peter, yet submit to them. Cooperate with them in all the ways that you can. Now that's very different, isn't it? The Bible is very different from the Quran. I've just read through the Quran. Here is the Bible. The Quran says, if people oppose you, then impose Sharia law, and if they still oppose you, then kill them. That is, the aim of the Quran is Darussalam, which means land under Allah's rule. But here you see, here is the Christian told to cooperate with a government. And obviously, where one's conscience is violated or they won't let you preach the gospel, that has to go on. But don't overthrow the government. Peter doesn't call them to overthrow the government. He calls them to be law-abiding citizens. And as we look down at verse 13, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority. I have to ask you this question. Here's the painful question. Which laws of the land do you habitually break? Which laws? You see, wearing a safety belt is a spiritual issue. It's not whether I feel like it or not, but I'm called to do that. Copying CDs and ignoring copyright is a spiritual issue. I'm commanded not to do it. Parking on double yellow lines for whatever length of time isn't something that doesn't matter. It does matter. It's a spiritual issue. On my bicycle, going through lights, going up one-way streets, cycling on the pavement, all those things, not using lights at night, and I have to say that I've got to sort this out. I'm hopeless on my bicycle, but actually it's a spiritual issue. Now, you may look at those things and you say, oh, these are just legalistic, prohibitive rubbish. They're a waste of time. Well, if you feel that, then you can write to your MP, and there is a democratic process that you can that you can go through. But actually, you're called to obey these laws if you're Christian. And so the issue isn't, oh, well, look, if I disobey them, I'll get caught and fined. No. The issue is, if we look down verse 13, obey them for the Lord's sake. So my behavior in the car, on my bicycle, with my taxes, is a spiritual issue. Romans 13, verse 1. Everyone must submit himself or herself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. It is a spiritual issue. So what is the one thing that has to change in your life on this? All of us will have things on their conscience. My bicycle is absolutely hopeless. But it is a spiritual issue. It's an issue of Christian character. And you see, if we look down, the governors are given a role of representing God as judge. They're to give active expression to God's righteousness and wrath. So again, if I do disobey the law, if I park on a double yellow line and I have to pay a fine, I am to pay it. They are there to exercise God's judgment. They're sent by God to punish those who do wrong, to commend those who do right. Now, please notice, my submission is not dependent on whether I like them or not. I don't know what your opinions are of Ken Livingstone, but if he introduces new traffic legislation, I am to obey it. If I don't like it, I must do all I can to vote him out. That is the correct channel. But the personal characteristics of Ken Livingstone are not to stop me obeying his office and function. We look down again. Do you see what it says? Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority. So where are you on this front? Can I ask again, what has to change? What is the one thing in terms of being law-abiding? It may not be taxes, driving, cycling, parking. It may be copyright or CDs. It may be something at work where you know you're not being ethical. You're not being absolutely honest in terms of the law of the land or whatever. I don't know what it is, but obedience is a spiritual issue. So we must ask God to help us to obey. Secondly, why submit? Verses 15, because of the reputation of the church. Can we look down again? So number one, because the authority is instituted by God. Secondly, because of the church's reputation. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. So what does that mean there? Well, it's back to the theme of verse 12. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. You see, he's saying again, don't give people ammunition to reject the gospel. Don't let them walk away by saying, well, have you seen the way that person drives? Or have you seen the totally godless, selfish life that they live? Have you seen the privatized life where they just build heaven here? And if we look down, it's very interesting. The word silence the ignorant talk of foolish men is actually in the Greek muzzle. So muzzle their talk. How do you muzzle their talk? By doing good. By being seen as such a wonderful servant of the public community. Now, in the early church, Christians were being accused of cannibalism. That's how the body and blood at communion were interpreted. Again, communion was called an orgy because Christians described it as a love feast. And Peter says, look, you discipline your children as they cross the road. You pay your taxes. You drive carefully. You pay the TV license on time. You are seen to do good in the community, to serve in the community. When it comes to the church building, you put disabled lifts in. You put in the right number of fire extinguishers. You have emergency lights. You apply for building permission where it is needed. In each area, you put in the correct number of exits. And as people see the way you live, as they see the way you contribute, they'll say, look, I can't believe that this slander is true. I see someone who's serving the local community. I think the way that, you may be slandering them, but actually I don't think that's true. And again, the word, if we look down, can we see if we look down? Ignorant talk That actually literally means, the word ignorant there means lack of knowledge. So that suggests that somebody has an obstinate unwillingness to learn or accept the truth and live such good lives, says Peter, that actually those that slag you off, as they do that, as they slander you, others would say, well, I just can't believe that. Look at the consistency of this person's life. Look at the fact that, say, they help with the homeless, and they're there serving the homeless. We have 200 volunteers that help with the homeless here at All Souls. This is the organisation ASLAN. We need more. And what this is saying is, do good in the community. I've got to say, what good are you doing? So on the one hand, are you obeying the laws? But secondly, are you being seen to do good? Or are you living a privatized life? It's once a month volunteering for ASLAN. I've also got information here about the All Souls Clubhouse, our Christian community center. There are a huge number of opportunities for serving here. I don't know how you can serve in the local community. It might be via All Souls. It might be via your home church. It might be in your home community, on the board of governors. I don't know, or serving the local school, or however it is. But do you see the message here? As we look down, let's see it again. Verse 15, doing good. Are you known for that? What good are you doing in the local community? And as we go on, verse 16, can we look down? Live as free men, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. Now, this came in because there were Christians who were saying, look, I live under God's authority. That means I can ignore the laws of the land. So they were saying, look, because I'm Christian, I don't have to bother with the other laws. I'm a Christian, I don't have to bother with double yellow lines. I'm a Christian, I don't have to bother with the local community. And here Paul says, no. The fact you're Christian should cause you, the fact you're a servant of Christ should cause you to serve, and not to say, oh, well, I don't have to bother, as a cover-up for evil, as a cover-up for the sins of omission. I always remember a man who came, he's dead now, called Keith DeBerry. He came and spoke as an evangelist at Christ Church Clifton when I cleaned the loos there. I cleaned the loos at that church for 2 years. And I was running him to the station. Now, the night before, he had spoken, given an evangelistic talk, and it really was the most predictable evangelistic talk I'd heard. The illustrations were all sort of 30 years old, and I'd heard all of them. And yet, after he spoke, a very large number of students came forward to become Christians, and he had given the full gospel. Who is Jesus? Why did he come? What does it mean to follow me, to follow him? And I was just stunned by the power of this man's message. Anyway, I was driving him to the train station, and on the way there was a beautiful church in Bristol, which Queen Elizabeth I said was the finest parish church in all England. It's called St. Mary's, and it's on the way to the station to Temple Meads. And we stopped there to look at it, but there were double yellow lines right round it. And he would not let me just park there so we could both run in. I had to drive the car round while he went in. He then checked that he could drive my car, which he could do because the license allowed that. And then he jumped in and drove the car round. And I remember thinking, here was a man who would not allow his freedom in Christ to enable him to do evil. And there was a consistency in his life. And I wonder how much of his power as a preacher came from the fact that he was godly in his personal life. Godliness is an amazing thing, isn't it? You can't describe it, but you know it when you see it. And there was a man who was under Christ's authority in every area. It was a great lesson to me. I'm much grateful for it. I'm so grateful for it. So that's the second thing we have to do. Let's the reputation of the church, let's do good in the community. Question, are you doing it? What are you doing? What are you doing in the local community? It's interesting, Save the Children have just had to let go of 300 staff. Why? Well, the biggest reason is that people under 40 are not giving. The people over 40 are giving, but the under 40s are just not giving. And you see, the consumer pound in this country is going towards mobile phones. It's not going towards charities. The charitable giving of the under 40s in this country is dreadful because they're spending it on themselves. And that shouldn't be the Christian way. Our resources, whether time or money or energy, are to be given to doing good. And that will help and aid the reputation of the church. Do you need to serve? Do come and get one of these. Well, let me finish. Let me finish with the last heading. Why again do we live this way? Because of the characteristic marks of the Christian, as we look down. Verse 17, show proper respect to everyone. And do you see the consistency here? Love the brotherhood of believers, fear God, honour the king. show proper respect to everyone. That means there are no second-class citizens in the Christian mind. There's no racism. There's no ageism. There's no sense of marking someone as lower status. I am to give myself to them as their servant, not to treat them as human resources. So I'm to show proper respect to each person as made in the image of God. I'm to love the brotherhood of believers. Why? Well, they'll be exhausting themselves doing good, and they'll need my support and love as they do that. Some of the Aslan volunteers, a lot of Aslan volunteers here, you know, they get up at 3 in the morning and go out and serve between 3 and 5 in the morning. Well, they need to be loved and cared for as they give themselves like that. And thirdly, as we look down, I'm to fear God, and as I fear God, I'll honour the king. Why do I honour the king, honour the authorities? Because I fear the Lord. There's a wonderful consistency there. Whether people outside the church, inside the church, in authority, or the God who made me, I'm living under authority I'm seeking to serve.